Hi, I'm Brett Snyder, author of Cranky Flyer.
Hi, I'm Brian Summers, and I write the Airline Observer. You're listening to The Air Show, the podcast where we talk about what goes on in the business of the sky.
So John is on assignment in South Carolina this week. What do they do in South Carolina? I guess we'll find out later. But it's just you and me today, Brian. So what are we talking about?
Brett, I was thinking we would talk about earnings, specifically the two U.S. airlines that have reported already, United and Delta. You probably know these airlines have a lot in common, so much so that almost every chance people at United get, they like to compare themselves to Delta. They're always talking about us and the folks in Atlanta. It's just the two of us on the top of the heap. Brett, I'm always amused, though, that if you talk to the Delta people, they say absolutely nothing about United. But before we touch on the rivalry between those airlines, or maybe the lack thereof, let's talk about the numbers from the recent quarter. How'd they do in the first quarter, Brett?
Well, Brian.
Can you give us a little bit more than that, Brett?
All right, fine. Let's start with Delta since they reported first. They reported revenue of $13.7 billion, ended up with a pre-tax income of $122 million, a 0.9% margin, which I think we can all agree in the first quarter, any margin is good margin.
Isn't the airline industry amazing for that reason?
Yeah. Well, you know, look, I mean, they wouldn't be happy with that on an annual basis, but for first quarter, this is gold here. Meanwhile, if we look at some of the metrics here, so TRASM, their total unit revenue here was down 0.7% year over year. And CASM-X, excluding fuel and all the goodies there, that was up 1.5%. Now, if we flip over to United, revenue came in at $12.5 billion, which seemed to make people pretty happy. They had a pre-tax loss of $164 million, which is a negative 1.3% margin. These are all GAAP numbers, by the way, not adjusted, but would have had a profit if Boeing had been able to deliver the goods, but that's a different issue. Their unit revenue, their TRASM, was actually up 0.6%, which is a big win for them on the revenue side. But their CASM-X was up 4.7%.
Should we talk in detail about Delta first?
Sure. What did you pull out of that was most interesting?
I sometimes find things interesting that other people don't pick up on as much. I'm interested in rhetoric and what they talk about. And one thing that struck me was in one of the first lines of the press release, and it said Delta has operated 26 cancel-free, brand-free, perfect days in the first quarter. So that means neither they nor their connection partners canceled a single flight. And if you remember, before the pandemic, Delta was obsessed with this idea of operational reliability, and it kind of went kaput there for about 3 years. They weren't doing all that much better than their competitors. Ed Bastian used to love to brag about, you know, we haven't canceled a flight in however many days. And, you know, I think it wasn't great when Delta lost that advantage against its competitors because, yeah, the onboard product is better and it has been better. But the secret sauce of Delta is not just the onboard product. It's the whole Delta experience. And I really felt like they're getting their mojo back, Brett. What do you think?
Well, I hope that's the case. Certainly, they've built this premium brand, and that raises expectations, right? And that means you expect to have your flight get there when you say it's going to get there. But the problem with some of these numbers here, you know, they can talk about 26 cancel-free days, but I think we all know Delta's favorite trick, which is we're just going to delay a flight for like 20 hours. Instead of canceling it.
Allegiant does it as well. It's not the only airline that does that.
It's not the only airline, but it is Delta's favorite trick that I don't think others of the big guys use to the same extent that Delta does. So, you know, just saying cancel-free days, that is not necessarily going to give us the full picture, I suppose. But it's true. It's better than what it was. They really had fallen off there. Just had not gotten their act together. And so it's encouraging to see it.
Yeah, it's interesting what they've done over there. Another thing, Brett, that I wanted to talk about, especially with you, because you are a former revenue management guru, right? 20 years ago or so at this
former
point.
Former guru. I remain a guru, sir.
I heard something on the earnings call that I haven't heard much about from a network carrier recently. And it was Glenn Hauenstein, the president of Delta, bragging about the airline's first quarter load factor, right? I mean, the old rule of thumb is that load factor for a network airline doesn't matter that much. It's all about profit, maximizing profit. He was so excited that load factor system-wide had gone up 2 points compared to last year. You think this is as big of a deal as he makes it out to be?
So look, load factor always matters every other week. And then fares matter in the off week. It's part of the airline revenue management yo-yo. And I think for the network carriers, load factor does matter less because they don't have as much ancillary, right? If you're Spirit or Frontier, you need to fill those seats because you can't unlock the ancillary opportunities at all unless you get butts in seats. But for the network carriers, you know, you might decide to sacrifice some load so that you can get a better fare. That absolutely happens. You know, in this case, I think it's important to point out load factor, especially international, when you're in the first quarter, which can be a weaker time anyway for international, for long haul. And so pointing out that you made gains on that end, it is helpful to show that demand is strong. And yes, their unit revenue was down a little year over year, unlike United. But it was still a pretty impressive performance when you can increase your load factor. That's a useful statistic to highlight because people do latch onto that, hey, we're not having trouble selling and filling our seats.
Yeah, there was some spin during the call about what this load factor increase means. If we were going to have a drinking game on a Delta earnings call, we might take a sip of our favorite alcohol as soon as somebody at Delta mentioned the word brand. Delta has become obsessed with this idea that it has the strongest brand of any U.S. airline. That people, if given the choice, if the prices are the same or close to it, they want to fly Delta, just like people go out of their way to go to Starbucks or to buy Nike shoes, because this brand is so strong that it says something about you as the purchaser to fly that airline or buy those shoes or drink that coffee. And Hauenstein pushed this a little bit further, and he said, look, you know, in the first quarter, we have a lot of empty seats. We can carry people we don't necessarily want to carry or need to carry the rest of the year. And when people have a choice, they choose the widget. What do you think about that one? I know you're probably not a huge brand guy, right?
In general, historically, no, I'm not. But I also come from the old days where it's price and schedule, price and schedule. But Delta's shown that it matters. I mean, they've built something that people do choose, and it has become a more premium thing. I have a lot of trouble personally. I struggle with the, oh, we're going to be like Nike and Starbucks. Like, no, man, you fly airplanes and, you know, people are wearing their Nike shoes everywhere they go. And, you know, sure, maybe someone can post on Instagram, like, look, I'm flying Delta, but I don't see it as being in the same category. But I think what it does is with purchase decision, I think that's right, that people are willing to pay more for Delta in many cases, and you see it in their revenue performance.
All right, Brett, I want to take you back into the Wayback Machine, because you were at America West all those years ago.
Yes, previously the most premium brand in the world, I think we can
exactly
all agree.
They had 747s, right, before you got
there? Oh, yeah, that was before my time, but yes.
Not a lot changes in the airline industry, generally speaking. But the Delta folks talked about a structural change in the U.S. industry about what summer looks like, what peak summer is. So Hauenstein, the president of Delta, said it's really more in the late second quarter now, and the third quarter is not as good as it used to be, and the second quarter is better. He broke it down and said a lot of it has to do with the fact that students in a lot of areas in the United States are now going to school a lot earlier than they used to. In Georgia, where Delta is based, they're going to school, I think, the first week in August or something like that. Have you noticed the structural change as well? Have we heard other airlines talk about it?
I don't think anything is really shocking about this. It, historically, summer kind of ends around mid-August, right? That's where you see significant changes, and you'll see it in some of the schedules as well when they put them out there that show, you know, decreases in capacity or just changing to more of a fall off-peak style schedule, whatever it may be. Mid-August has been that place. I think what we see, June is the biggest month. People want to get out there in June, do their big trips, you know, all that kind of stuff. It feels like it's taken on greater importance. At least that's some of the anecdotal things that I've seen. You know, July is still big, of course, but then it certainly does peter out more into August. And I don't know if that's a trend that's going to continue to evolve or if we're kind of done with that now. I'm not really sure. But it doesn't surprise me to hear that they would see more pull forward maybe into May, because if you're starting school in early August, you're getting out on the early side in May as well.
Yeah, let's go from school children to the other thing that's most important right now, business travel. Did you catch some of the things that Delta said about business travel? They said that their managed corporate sales went up 14% year over year. I know a lot of airlines have been talking about anecdotes, but we haven't seen as much data, even cherry-picked data that makes your airline look good. This seemed like a pretty good thing for Delta, right?
Yeah, it's a great thing for Delta and probably not a great thing for American. But, you know, this is something that we've been talking about the entire pandemic, right? This has been, when will corporate come back? Will it come back? Is everything different? It's a whole structural change. The world is ending, whatever it may be. And I think, you know, Delta has probably been most consistent in its belief that it's going to come back. It's slow. It may come back differently, more bleisure, whatever you want to say about that. But this is a segment that's not going away. And we just need to wait for it to come back. And it sounds like this year is where we saw some significant gains for Delta. It feels like a big jump. And they know it's a big jump because they actually want to highlight it, where in the past they haven't really wanted to highlight these things as much because they just say we're waiting on it and, you know, things are coming back slowly but not as strongly. And now here we are and they're saying, yes, corporate, great, amazing, happy times for everyone.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is they say it doesn't look all that much different than before the pandemic. They said the trips might be a little longer. There's still a little bit of bleisure. And then another big change that they said they've seen is the booking curve is farther out. And they said that that's probably because there are no change fees. And even if you're a business, you might as well book early.
Right.
But otherwise, it's quasi-normal out there. How about that?
Yeah, and you know what? United, they said the same thing. It was up 14% year over year. I don't know how they both ended up with the same exact number. But, you know, this is something that you see these two airlines that still remain focused on that managed travel business. United has probably been a little more proactive at trying to change things, but and Delta just stays more traditionalist so far. But the real question here is what happens when American talks? Because American, as we all know, has had an enormous change in its sales and distribution infrastructure. And if managed corporate is all coming back for these guys, how much of that is it coming back? And how much of it is just people leaving American because of some of the changes? And that, of course, we won't know unless American tells us about their change in corporate business. And my guess is on the call, they probably aren't going to talk about it. But I look forward to finding out if that's the case or not.
Yeah, the folks at American have become very good right now about talking around things that they don't want to talk about. And by very good at it, I mean they think they're very good at it, but we can all see through it. There's one more thing I want to talk about Delta, and then we can move on to United. Delta keeps talking about restoring its core hubs in the center of the country. And they said that they had up to 100 regional jets that are either parked or in most cases underutilized. Did you look at any data at this?
Delta made strategic decisions during the pandemic that I think the further we get from the pandemic, they're proving to be smarter and smarter as we go. And so what we saw during the pandemic was Delta made moves. Obviously, as we talked about last week, they made big moves in Boston. In New York and LA, they did big infrastructure moves. Delta said, look, we're going to put our capacity where it's a battle, not necessarily where we're going to do the best right now in this moment. We're going to put it where we need to fight. And that's why the coastal hubs all got this capacity. And you have the whatever you want to call them, but Minneapolis and Detroit up north, Salt Lake in the mountains, and then Atlanta in the southeast. We did look at the regionals to see what the future schedules looked like. And Detroit is the only one so far that you can actually see an increase in block hours. Most of those are coming from Endeavor, flying more regional block hours there. We haven't really seen much of an increase elsewhere. They're still very down. But Delta is also, their schedule's only accurate into the first part of summer. Beyond that, we might see more changes. We certainly have seen that at American, where they've been increasing their utilization. In fact, they're, I think in Q2, if I remember right, in Q2, American's regional departures are up something like 15% year over year. So I would expect that Delta will get to that same place. Maybe not 15%, but Delta will get to the point where it's adding back more capacity. And we'll see. I don't know. But certainly those are the hubs where there's more opportunity because they've spent so much time trying to fight the battles along the coast that it's the ones in the middle that I think they need to put more into. I mean, isn't that how you would look at it, or do you see it differently?
No, I agree with you. All right, that is Delta. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll return to talk about United. Brett, I don't want to shock you or our listeners, but every now and then I fly economy class.
Gasp.
But the thing is, I still like my extra space. And so when the price is right, I buy an extra seat. It makes the flight a lot more comfortable. But you know the problem with it? On my favorite airline, I actually have to pay full price for that extra middle seat. And that's pretty expensive. I wish there was another way to get extra space, like a little bit cheaper.
Aha. Well, sir, there is.
There is?
There is.
What is it?
Our sponsor, PlusGrade, has a product called Seat Blocker. It enables passengers to request to block a seat, or potentially the entire row, not just the middle, at a big discount compared to the normal fare. And on some flights, it can be as cheap as $8. On average, it's $60, PlusGrade tells us. So it ends up being a pretty huge discount.
That sounds really cool to me as a traveler. But if I put on my airline commercial hat, I wonder, aren't airlines going to lose revenue this way?
See, here's the thing about it. It doesn't affect sales, because what they do is the seats are soft blocked. So when a passenger uses Seat Blocker, pays for a middle or a row, they're told that if the flight ends up being full, then the airline may actually sell that seat, and then the passenger doesn't get charged for it. So in that sense, the airlines can truly use this when the seat will be empty and not any other time. And that's pretty compelling to have a little extra margin there for our revenue managers and airline CEOs out there.
That is very interesting. I think we call that a win-win. But where can I find this product? I haven't seen it before. Which airlines use Seat Blocker?
There are almost 20 airlines that are using this now, ranging from the teeny tiny Luxair to the very big Qantas.
PlusGrade are the experts in monetizing unsold inventory. Reach out to them to implement this for your airline so you stop leaving money in empty seats.
I know we're in earnings season here in the U.S. for Q1, and everyone's talking about that and looking ahead to summer. But I was out with friends the other night, not industry people, not people like us, and they were talking about holiday fares. And I know, it's more than 6 months away, but these are regular people, Brian.
Okay, if I were a normal airline customer, I could see starting to look at those prices now and working out a budget to be able to afford 4 round-trip tickets 7 or 8 months from now. Obviously, that can be an expensive trip.
Have you heard of Uplift? They're a buy now, pay later solution that allows customers to pay for their flight over time with low monthly payments. Plus, right now, they're running a promotion with Southwest Airlines where you can book a Wanna Getaway Plus, Anytime, or Business Select fare and pay monthly for your flight with 0% APR. It's super easy to use. You just search for a trip like you normally would, and when you're ready to check out, choose Uplift as your form of payment to see monthly payment options that are customized just for you.
The offer is available until April 30th, 2024. To learn more about Uplift's loan lenders, see uplift.com/lenders. Terms and conditions apply. Visit southwest.com/uplift for more. All right, Brett, we're back. Should we talk about United, the second most impressive management team in the U.S. airline industry?
Ooh, them's fighting words right there, sir. Let's talk about them.
Yeah, I think it was a very impressive performance by United. As you mentioned up top, they probably would have made money if not for the Boeing 737 MAX 9 issues. They had a very good quarter domestically. They talked about how they were doing less flying in the first quarter than they did in past years, and they were focused on profitability. One thing that struck me on United's earnings call, and I suspect nothing happens by chance on a United's earnings call. These things tend to be pretty well planned out. They talked about strength in a few interesting regions. They said they did well in Florida. And they said they did well in Las Vegas, especially year over year, well above their system average in Florida. Brett, do you know any other airlines that have been whining and crying about Florida?
I mean, Florida, you know, this, I think, fits with what United has been saying, which is that the travelers, when they have a choice, will pick United or another legacy. And, you know, United loves their very punitive basic economy product with no carry-on bag allowed. But, you know, they're saying, look, we figured out the right mix and people will choose us. I mean, the thing that really grabbed me in this is that their unit revenue was up year over year, which Delta could not say the same. Delta did increase its load factor, so maybe if Delta had not, it would have had a similar result. But being able to do that in Q1, that's no small feat, considering the general trends that are going on. So Florida, Las Vegas, yeah, sure, why not? If that's working for them, what else were they talking about?
Yeah, they talked a little bit about, they didn't use the word weakness on long haul sectors. But, you know, United is trying to be what they call the flag carrier of the United States. And they have all these wide bodies. They're adding more wide bodies. And there's this old question, right? What do you do when the demand for European flights drops in the winter and you have to find a place to put the airplanes? So a lot of them, as you know, have been going to the Pacific. Some of them have been going to logical places in Asia, but increasingly they're going down to Australia during the first quarter. Capacity across the Pacific for United in the first quarter was up 66%.
Yeah, it's brutal.
PRASM was down 13%. And they did say that they expect to make some capacity adjustments next year to a small number of underperforming routes.
Yeah, they put so much capacity into Australia and New Zealand this year. It's not a surprise to see unit revenues down there, for me at least, because they put so much in there. They added second banks on some of these flights. It's a big expansion, so it's not really that much of a surprise. The question is, can they make it work? Because so much of this wide body strategy is we have to have a place to put them in the winter. So Australia, New Zealand.
Yeah. Another interesting thing that happened on the earnings call is Scott Kirby got up on his soapbox.
That is, by the way, the best part of any earnings call is when he does that.
He said, I'm going to take this question. And then he gave one of his long answers. And it came down to, you know, what is the moat of United Airlines? And he went on, and it was one of his great answers. He said, United has a better product. It has a better network. It has a better loyalty program. And so people choose to fly with United. And he said that in the past, the moat had been breached, that's his word, from two things that made United not as valuable to customers as it could have been. The first one was change fees. And we know he's been adamant that getting rid of change fees was absolutely the right thing for United. So now it leaks fewer customers to Southwest. And then the second is that in the past, United leaked customers because it didn't have the right product for price-sensitive travelers. And so by upgauging and by adding basic economy, he thinks United is in the right shape. Also on this call, United said that basic economy sales in the first quarter were up 35% year over year. So I don't think that's as much of a defensive product anymore as it once was. United's really trying to sell basic economy.
Well, I think it still is defensive. I mean, this goes back to the Florida and Las Vegas conversation we're having. You know, this is still a product that they want to deploy in places where other carriers may have a price advantage if they don't do that. Or United would have a significant product advantage over the other carriers at the same low price. So I think, you know, it is still a defensive product in that sense. But I think maybe what shifted is that they actually want to sell it now, whereas in the past, maybe they didn't.
Should we talk about this FAA audit, Brett?
Yeah, please.
Well, I think the people at United are smart enough not to predict anything, but they did mention on the call that one of the problems of the audit is that they're able to take delivery of new aircraft now, but they are not able to put the new aircraft on their operational certificate, so they can't fly them.
So this is what I wish we had Ostrower here on the call. Does that mean they have to pay for them now and they can't use them?
I don't know.
Or has Boeing stopped making them pay for anything at this point? This is a good question. Either way, it's not great, but hopefully it's got to be temporary.
Well, first of all, Leslie Josephs at CNBC asked when this might end, and Scott Kirby said, it will conclude when it concludes. We're not going to predict the time. So they're not sure when it's going to end. There wasn't a whole lot of clarity about what exactly is going on at United. It's just sort of a rigorous safety audit. It's hard to gauge this. You and I are commercial minds, right? And so that if we worked at airlines, we'd be the type of people that would say, give us the airplanes, and then we would sell them. I still think that there's kind of that mentality at United among the people in the commercial team that this will get sorted out and it'll take as long as it takes.
It will get sorted out. It has to at some point. I just don't know how long, or do heads have to roll, or what's going to be the thing. The thing that concerns me the most is that the FAA has been in reactive, show our strength mode ever since, I don't know, 5 years ago. They've, you know, after all the egg on their face, after the MAX certification debacle, where they basically admitted, yeah, we just kind of let Boeing self-certify on a lot of this stuff and everything's fine. And I think, you know, that forced them to puff up their chests and say, well, we need to, you know, we're going to be the regulator. This is what we're going to do. But then I think they've done a lot of things since then that don't really make a ton of sense, other than in a world where you just need to show the public that you're doing stuff and things.
Yeah. Brett, I want to finish talking about what we started talking about, this idea that the United people want us to think that there's only two U.S. airlines that are class of the bunch. They're going to have the best product. They're going to have the best results financially. It's United and Delta, Delta and United, and everyone else is so far behind. Do you buy what United's selling? Margins like that?
If we're talking about financial results, sure, those speak for themselves. So, yeah, I mean, I think United and Delta are proving that they're kind of in the same range. You know, maybe Delta's results are still a little bit better at this point. But You know, they are in a class of their own in terms of results for a large global carrier, it seems. And I don't know who's going to challenge that. It would have to be American, but they have not shown the ability to do that yet.
You've been listening to The Air Show. If you have suggestions or questions for us about United, Delta, or anything else, or if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, go to our website, theairshowpodcast.com, to get in touch.
Thanks to Uplift and Plus Grade for sponsoring the show. The Air Show Podcast is produced and edited by Sarah Fay. Our theme music is by Joshua Mosier.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.